When you love riding a motorcycle, you want to ride it everywhere, even to a physical.
Let's check your weight. Hop on the scale. Look at that. You're down a few pounds.
Oh, yeah. Must be the new carbon fiber wheels.
And when you love saving money, you want to save even more. That's why GEICO makes it easy to bundle your motorcycle and car insurance.
I'm going to prescribe 91 octane for your engine knock, and we'll want to see you again in 3,000 miles.
Kickstart your savings with GEICO Motorcycle. Bundle and save on the things you love.
This is the Bob and Tom Show. We are live in the Napa Auto Parts studios, coast to coast on great radio stations like this one, worldwide on American Forces Radio. Thanks very much for joining us. We have Chick McGee across the way getting ready for tomorrow's Napa Auto Parts Shoe-In of the Week, the sports prognostication, if that's a word, show, and, of course, the Napa Tool of the Week coming up on Friday. We've been talking about our team-building ideas for the staff here. And I have been working on this bowling event. Yesterday we did a special cooking event. We'll have a video of that up. And Christy had a good idea, which was there's a circus school nearby. We could go learn how to trapeze. What's the word for that? I'm not sure. In any event, what were the other ideas you had? Go-karting?
Go-karting, zip-lining, the circus.
Paintball.
I don't like the paintball. That hurts.
I love paintball.
Can we do laser tag? It doesn't hurt.
No. Yeah, but the hurting is part of the fun.
No,
yeah.
I don't want to get hurt.
It's funny. No.
I've been hurt enough in my life, Josh. Wear... I'm done with being hurt. Yeah,
this won't be your soul.
I say
no heartbreak involved.
I say paintball.
I don't want to cry.
The only problem with paintball is my goggles always fog up. Can you get fog-proof goggles?
Yeah,
why do they fog up? I'm confused.
I don't know. Maybe I have hot eyes.
You do have hot eyes.
He's sweating.
I'm getting a lot of email. Josh's eyes are really, I like him very much. We're going to talk with John Feinstein in just a few minutes. We have Christy Lee at the Bob and Tom News Desk. What else have you got over there?
Well, workers at the Philadelphia Zoo have finally determined the gender of a baby gorilla born last month. It's a girl. They still haven't named the little baby, but now it'll be a lot easier since they know it's the gender.
Yeah, a really teeny tiny boy. We're not sure.
No, they know it's a girl. And an abandoned cat may be Britain's oldest feline. Banjo was found by RSPCA Southawk Hattery and discovered that he was microchipped back in 1991 when he was believed to be 2 years old. Rescuers were shocked the 27-year-old cat was able to survive on the streets. According to the center's manager, Banjo must have used up all of his 9 lives by now. Authorities,
especially being named Banjo.
Yeah, contacted the Guinness Book of Records.
If they'd named him Accordion, he would have been dead 20 years ago.
To confirm, he's indeed
the Banjo's taken enough of it.
What is a cattery?
A cattery is like a shelter just for cats.
Okay.
Like a winery.
That's not a thing.
A fishery.
It's in Britain. It's a cattery.
They call it a cattery?
Yes. Yeah.
That's like calling a monastery a monkery. That's not
it
a
is.
Word.
It's a British
You've never
thing.
Heard of the Cattery Awards?
Oh, my.
Hey! Sorry. The 98th Cattery Award!
I got a friend that has a cat over 20.
Super.
Yeah?
Remind me to stay away from you and your friend.
What's wrong? Why don't you like cats?
Because cats are jerks. Even cat owners know they're jerks.
I know, but they are funny and cuddly, and I like them.
I like cats. I got mice. I need a cat.
When you pick them up and you fold their ears over, you do that, you pick them up and fold their ears over and go, bat down the hatches. They love that. They give you that look.
You don't hear about dog scratch fever, do you? No.
I had cat scratch
fever.
You
hear about dogs ripping throats out.
You always remember the cat, though, if it's a hairball.
Every now and again that happens.
I know, but we're not talking about that.
When you had cats, then you always wonder if it was a hairball or a sleep apnea.
Are you going to get a new cat?
Oh, we have John on the phone? Okay.
You have a cat at your place?
Change
hey,
the topic.
Speaking of cats, man.
Our next cat. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, man. It's John, baby.
Hey, this cat.
I want to know, are you going to get a new cat?
Yeah, Josh.
No, my place is a little too small to have a litter box somewhere around.
I have dogs now.
We're having a big debate about whether to get another cat because we have two.
Yes.
But one of them, and we want another one. Our 5-year-old wants a kitten, but one of them, our cat whose name is Alan.
I'm a big fan of people names for pets. Yep. This is my dog, Daryl. Love it.
We named him Alan because we knew the minute we got him from the shelter that he was completely insane. So we thought it would be good to give him an insane name.
Is this after Iverson?
No, it's after Alan.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. If it's after anybody, it would be Alda.
Okay.
Oh, yeah,
I love Alda.
He's kooky.
Who doesn't? But anyway, he's such an aggressive cat. We're a little bit concerned that that he might kill the kitten. So the debate goes on.
Okay, yeah. That's another showstopper. Thank you. John Feinstein is our guest. And like everyone else on today's show, we get on a fun topic. The next thing you know, there's death.
Yeah.
John is a great writer, and Chick accused him earlier of being a Washington Redskins hater, but then he realized it was
more of a Daniel Snyder hater than anything else.
Then I said, well, Daniel Snyder hater, who isn't?
Yes. Well, and with Snyder, it probably goes beyond whatever the next word is on for hate. I've often said he's three of the worst people I've ever met.
John, did you see the Monday night game, the Steeler game at FedEx, and there's nothing quieter than the owner's box with Matthew McConaughey?
I love it when they show shots of that box when the team is losing. It's just fabulous. Oh. And I have friends who have actually sat in the box. Mm-hmm. Who have said that when the team is losing, no one is allowed to speak. Oh. I'm saying, that must be fun.
Well, of course they're not.
Go to a football game and be in a cone of silence.
For the most part, when they showed the team owners, it's always some camera that they had to borrow from the Mount Everest exhibition because they're so far away. You know, it's kind of hazy, and they're going through six layers of glass. Why don't they just stick a camera in the owner's box and call it a day?
Well, because none of the owners want close-ups of all the work that's been done on their faces.
Is that a Jerry Jones reference?
Jones being example numero uno.
Right, yeah.
Well, John, before we get to your new book, are you actually actively working on another one already as we speak?
Yes. As we speak, I am standing right outside the gate to walk into Hazeltine at the Ryder Cup, and I've been working on a book that will focus on this Ryder Cup for about the last year. I've interviewed all the players on both teams.
How about Tiger?
I said players.
I know. Did you hear the big story a couple days ago about Tiger getting kicked out of the team photograph?
No, yesterday. It was yesterday.
Oh, okay. Yesterday he got kicked out. Yeah.
And what happened was he went and stood on the end of the back row, and the photographer said, "No, Tiger, no, you're not there." And Tiger thought he meant go to the other end of the back row.
Oh.
So he went and stood at the other end, and they said, no, you're not in the picture.
Oh,
players only.
Oh.
And, you know, all kidding aside, I'm sure that was a horrible moment for Tiger, you know, with all these people watching and taking pictures and being reminded you are not a player at this moment. And he laughed it off, you know, because he knew the cameras were rolling. But he's Tiger Woods, for crying out loud. And they said, nope, you can't stand here with Ryan Moore. You're not good enough.
Oh.
Now, if we could go on kind of a serious note, the very sad death of the great Arnold Palmer. Mm-hmm. Who I'm not sure a lot of people realize, but with his association with Mark McCormick, they kind of invented a whole new era of sports endorsements. And Palmer was really the first guy at that level.
Yeah, no, I've said this often. Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods, in any order you want to pick, are the two best players in the history of golf. Arnold Palmer is the most important player in the history of golf, and maybe in the top five most important athletes, for just the reason you mentioned there, Tom, because when he came along, and it was a perfect storm. The first golf TV was 1954. Palmer won his first tournament in 1955. The Masters was first on television in 1956. He won the Masters in 1958. He had this sex appeal. He had this charm. He loved people. People loved him. And his college classmate, Mark McCormick, was a lawyer, and he said, "Yeah, let me see if I can get some deals for you, you know, to make more money, because there wasn't that much money in prize money back then." And all of a sudden, Palmer was endorsing every product in America, and people loved him, and he is, by the way, made more money than any athlete in history, including Michael Jordan, including Tiger Woods, anybody else you want to mention. And he made golf popular on television, in corporate America, among men, among women, and honestly was one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. He had a unique gift of making you feel, when you were in his presence, that you were the most important person in his life. The first time I ever interviewed him, which was in 1994, I spent 2 hours with him at his house. I was working on A Good Walk Spoiled. And after about 2 hours, I felt I didn't want to overstay my welcome. And I said, "Well, thank you so much for the time." And he said, "Have you got everything you need?" And I said, "Well, I'm sure I do." And he said, "Well, I'm going down in my workshop. I'm going to work down there for a while. If you want to come down and hang out with me, that'd be fine." So I went down and hung out with him for another hour and a half. And by the way, he also had a way of making you relax when you met him. Because, you know, you're meeting Arnold Palmer. I mean, I grew up as a little kid watching him, watching Nicholas, watching Player. And when I walked in the door that morning, his assistant, Doc Giffen, who was his right-hand man for only 53 years, said, introduced us, and Arnold shook hands, and he said, "So I hear you went to Duke." And I said, "Yes, I did." And he said, "Couldn't get into Wake Forest, huh?"
Nice.
And immediately, you know, you're disarmed. And so I was actually out here at Hazeltine on Sunday because I wanted to get out before the crowds came out here and see the entire golf course and do some stuff you can do when the place is empty. And Sunday night, I was doing a speech and got the news and had to scramble to come back here to go on air on Golf Channel because they did 24 straight hours without a commercial break, strictly on Arnold Palmer. Of course, he co-founded Golf Channel, so that had a little to do with it, but also because he was Arnold Palmer.
Yeah, and he lived in his hometown, basically.
Yeah, he spent the winters in Orlando at Bay Hill, which he owned, where the Arnold Palmer Invitational has been held for years. But yeah, every spring he would go back up to La Trobe. He bought the golf club where his father had worked as the pro and as the superintendent, the maintenance guy, when he was a boy growing up, and bought the club. And you know, and the thing about Palmer was he would go to La Trobe Country Club. He would go to Bay Hill in the morning. And he'd go out with the guys and, you know, play, you know, $10 Nassau or Scramble, whatever the rest of the members were playing that day. Arnie would join them and be one of the guys. Mm. And he was the ultimate one of the guys guy.
Yeah, great guy. My dad was in a wheelchair, and my brother heard that Arnold Palmer was playing just a round of golf one day. And so he drove around and found where he was going to be and wheeled my father up kind of at the side of the road. Arnold Palmer saw him. Walked off the course to introduce himself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and you know, everybody has a story like that about Arnold going out of their way. I walked with him the last round he ever played in a U.S. Open in 1994 at Oakmont. And it was brutally hot, and he was 64, and he was, you know, he was exhausted on the back nine. But I swear, Tom, every person who called out, "Go, Arnie, yay, Arnie, we love you, Arnie," he would look them in the eye and wave or say thanks or thanks for coming out, whatever. And 20,000 people went home that day and said to their families, "Hey, Arnold Palmer said hello to me," because he did. He really did. He was unique that way. And one of the most amazing scenes I've ever seen as a reporter was that day, because when he finished, he shot 81, and it didn't matter. I mean, he walked up 18. All the players had come out of the locker room to watch him make that walk, and it was extraordinarily emotional. And he went into the media tent and he tried to talk and he kept breaking down. Talk, cry. And finally he got up to go. And every single person in the media tent stood up and applauded, which, as you know, is completely unprofessional. No cheering in the press box. Every person did it, and it was absolutely the right thing to do because Palmer had done so much for virtually every person in that room. I've never seen a scene like that with an athlete in my life. And I was one of a handful of guys who kind of walked back to the locker room with him, which was unair-conditioned, so it was brutally hot in there. And Arnie just sat there and talked to four or five of us for a while. And I'll never forget, he finally looked up and said, "You know, I shot 81 today. In any other sport, I'd have been booed because I was terrible. And all those people cheered me. How lucky am I?" And my thought, I wrote this in the Washington Post the other day, was, no, we were the lucky ones. Yeah. And he was just an extraordinary man.
Well, John Feinstein is our guest. What's the title of the new book going to be?
The Ryder Cup book? Yeah. I have no idea. I have to find out what happens this week before I start thinking about a title.
How about Chick McGee presents John Feinstein and the Ryder
Cup? That's always on the list.
Oh, thank you.
We haven't worked out the deal. You know, if you want to be the title sponsor, you got to come up with
$50. Okay.
Now, actually,
no problem.
John, we have audio of you that we run on a fairly regular basis.
I think you can hear this, John. Here we go. Here's you the last visit with us here on the Bob and Tom Show.
I know what this is. You're a sweet fellow, but you're an idiot.
I play that all the time.
You know. Well, when I write my book on you, Chick, that will be the title.
Okay. Now, John,
a sweet fellow, but an idiot.
One of the things that you do, you also write books for young readers in an effort to get young people to actually put down that electronic thing, that iPad gizmo, and actually read books. Your new one is called The DH, part of the trilogy. Do you want to explain what this is all about?
Yeah, sure. We've talked about the first couple of books in this series. I came up with this concept because it bothers me so much, as we've discussed, Tom, that kids today, the minute they show any talent in any sport, that's their sport, 12 months a year. You know, when I was a kid, we played football in the fall, basketball in the winter, baseball in the spring, and maybe golf or tennis or swimming in the summer. Nowadays, kid shows talent in a sport, and he's going to summer camps in that sport. He's playing summer ball in that sport. He's going away to academies to go to school for that sport. And I think kids need to play sports, not work at sports, not right. have it be their job when they're 12. Mm-hmm. So I created this character named Alex Myers, who is a 14-year-old high school freshman, and he is a three-sport athlete. And in the first book, The Walk-On, he played football. In the second book, The Sixth Man, he played basketball. And now in The DH, he's playing baseball. And he's a very talented athlete, but he wants to just play the games. His parents raised him to play the games. And, of course, along the way, he runs into all these various issues in each book that I create to have a storyline. But while I'm trying to entertain the kids, and as you said, Tom, try to get more kids to actually read, I'm also trying to throw in maybe a little bit of a lesson or two for the parents on how to deal with a talented or even a not talented athlete, whether he be a boy or a girl. In my first series, you might remember that Stevie and Susan Carroll, the two main characters, were aspiring sports writers, but the athlete among them was Susan Carroll, because I wanted to make the point that in today's day and age, right. thank God, through Title IX, girls are athletes just as much as boys are athletes.
And thank you, John.
It's been fascinating because I get two kinds of letters on these books, both series. One in the first series was from a lot of mothers who said, I'm so glad you didn't, you know, make the stereotypical boy jock athlete hero and the girl the cheerleader, and this is great for my daughter. And the other one, far more of them actually, in both series, from parents saying, my son doesn't read. All he cares about is sports. I gave him your book. He loved the book. When is the next one coming out? And those letters are just great to get.
Good. I thought it was kind of interesting in light of the Tim Tebow thing, where you've got all these sports writers that are up in arms the fact that Mr. Tebow, how dare he try another sport? I just think it's hilarious. Hey, if the guy could do it, great. More power to him.
No, I absolutely. And he's not going to play for the Mets. He's never going to make it to Citi Field. But he's selling a lot of product for him, I'll tell you that much. And But I've always had this big thing about people complain when a great athlete goes on for too long. You know, well, he should retire. He's damaging his legacy. Was Michael Jordan's legacy damaged by playing those 2 years with the Wizards? I don't think so. And the point is, it's their legacy.
Yeah.
It's up to them to decide when they want to quit. And if Tim Tebow wants to try baseball because he still wants to compete, you know, more power to him. I don't have any problem with it.
As a writer, does your publisher feel the same way about you sometimes when you come up with an idea and he goes, well, I wanted you to write about Tiger Woods. You're writing about the Patriot.
Oh, that's a good example right there. You mentioned The Last Amateurs, the Patriot League book, because when I presented that idea to my agent and my publisher, they ran from the room screaming, you know, oh my God. In fact, Bob Woodward, who's been my mentor for 100 years, said, can't you just write a magazine story? And I really wanted to do the book. I took a smaller advance to do it, and the book ended up on the bestseller list. So every once in a while, a blind squirrel finds an acorn.
Okay, we're talking with the great John Feinstein.
Even Chick. And,
that's right. Thank you, John.
Are you doing the audiobook? Have you done audiobooks for?
All my kids' books are on audio, and the more recent nonfiction books are all on audio. In fact, when the Legends Club came out, I think I might have mentioned when we talked about that book that Mike Krzyzewski believes himself to be ADD. He was of the generation where they never diagnosed it, but he thinks he's ADD and has never, according to him, has never finished a book. So I gave him an audio copy of the book to read. or to listen to. And he looked at me and he said, so who reads this? And I said, well, I do. He said, you think I want to listen to your blanking voice for 11 and a half hours?
Yeah, so I do a lot of audiobooks when I swim. And sometimes the worst words you can see are read by the author. Not to say that's for you, John.
No, and it's interesting. The big timers, maybe just because they don't want to do it, you know, like J.K. Rowling doesn't read her books. Actually, a great actor named Jim Dale did all the Harry Potter books.
Sure.
But they've always liked me to do the books. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy trying to sort of do the voices. And especially with the kids' books where you've got made up characters, so you can just make up any voice you want.
Now, how do you do the young teenager girl voice?
Well, with Susan Carroll in the first book, I said, "Well, y'all better go back to the game because you're gonna miss the game if you don't get there." And she's smarter than that, but she's Southern. She's from North Carolina, so I throw in the Southern accent.
That would be fun, John. It's always a great pleasure to speak to you. We got to talk more. The new one is the DH.
Yep.
And John's got a ton of books. They're a shelf full of books. And so do you think Tiger will talk to you at some point?
At some point, I do.
Okay.
I do. Okay. I don't know if he'll tell me the truth, but he'll talk to me at some point, I think. You know, whenever I see him, hello, Tiger, hello, John. And I think that he's changing because his life has changed, because he's getting kicked out of pictures now and stuff like that. And I'm not saying that as a joke, just because he's understanding that he is, in fact, human like the rest of us. So I think as the years go by, he will be a different guy, as we all are, right?
Right. Yeah.
Hopefully we all evolve. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks, John. It's always a pleasure. Let's talk soon.
All right. Thanks for having me. Chrissy, right. I'm glad you're back.
Take care, John.
Hey, I'm Chris Van Vliet. Go behind the scenes and beyond the headlines with the biggest names in pro wrestling and beyond.
Mr. Sandman.
All I ever wanted to be was a pro wrestler. So I got to live my life
and make people really happy.
The Heartbreak Kid himself, Shawn Michaels.
Do you think there's anybody better than you were?
I think I was great at what I did, and I think other people were great at what they did as well. Greatness is more a mindset, I think, than anything else.
Mindset, motivation, insight with Chris Van Vliet. Follow and listen on your favorite platform.